Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Predictable Revenue Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Stewart. Today, I'm joined by Sarah Tosh, and you'll never believe she's in charge of driving pipeline at Sixter. Recently got promoted. She's now the Senior Director of Market Development. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Colin. I am so excited to join you today. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. I'm excited because I initially, if you had told me about this topic, as a salesperson, back before I was in this role, I probably would have brushed it off and be like, you marketing folk, right? Because today we're talking about how sort of brand and outbound can get along. And my previous experience or my, you know, previous roles, I would have said they don't, it doesn't matter. Marketing doesn't drive, you know, a ton of value for the outbound team. This is Colin, previous predictable revenue. I've learned a lot since then. So I'm looking forward to having, to learning a little bit more and going a bit deeper on sort of how these two can live together.
Yeah. Colin, I'm hoping I can change your opinion even more than I already have. So I'm excited to explore today's topic.
So talk to me about how we got here. Like why is brand getting involved in outbound in the first place? Isn't that just something salespeople do?
Yeah. That's such a great question. And, you know, when you think about it, everything that your sales team, your implementation team, your ops team, your sales development team does is an extension of the brand. So, you know, the sales development team falls within my organization. And when you think about it, I oftentimes compare the role of sales development to that of a blind date, right? We've all gone on those blind dates where you're super excited beforehand, you show up and it either goes really well, lived up to your expectations, or it didn't go well, right? So with sales development, we talk so much, so deeply internally about sales development being our brand ambassadors. They oftentimes are the folks that are the first people to go on that blind date and have that interaction with your next best customer that, you know, for us internally, we're constantly asking ourselves, how do we make sure that brand is forefront in everything that our sales team is doing on a daily basis?
So it's always a balance between sort of personalizing, being creative, but at the end of the day, you've got to hit your number. So how do you strike, can you talk to me about how you strike that balance?
Absolutely. So, as you mentioned, when you first introduced me, my role has changed a little bit over the past month. And the reason for my role slightly changing is, you know, we're really trying to push this mindset at Sixter for this mindset of, you know, everything that marketing does needs to drive pipeline, right? And everything that sales development does needs to drive pipeline. So, you know, my own, and I don't want to make this too much about what we're doing here at Sixter, but historically sales development was a sales function. And over the past two quarters, we've organically almost been aligning more closely to marketing because of this ideology of like, we are the representation of the brand. Mm-hmm. That this past week, we decided to legitimize that and say, you know what? Sales development is a marketing function. Everything that they do is to drive pipeline. Everything that marketing does is to drive pipeline. So by combining these two forces into the pipeline team, it's gonna force marketing to have a number and realize everything I do is to drive pipe. And it's gonna force sales development to make sure that they're always up to date when it comes to recent content, upcoming events, our most recent sticker release that our customers love, but really aligning around pipeline, 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 and everything marketing is doing is to drive that pipeline.
That's really interesting. It's a theme that I've been seeing over the last couple of years, basically since we started this podcast.
Yeah.
The frequency of sales development teams just, and there's no statistical significance to my data, it's just what I've noticed, is that just that the frequency of teams that I hear that are rolling up to marketing has increased in the people that I've talked to.
Yeah, and Colin, I think, and are you familiar with the State of Sales Development, the report that the Bridge Group puts out every year?
Trish.
Yeah, I treat that report kind of as my Bible for benchmarking my team against other best-in-class sales development teams. And it's interesting, the data is showing that you're spot on. Like more teams are aligning to marketing than sales dev. And I was hoping Trish would touch on this. And Trish, I hope you're listening. But I firmly believe that a lot of that has to do with this shift towards account-based marketing. When you think about account-based marketing, once again, your sales team and your SDRs are like the quarterback of executing these plays that I firmly believe a lot of that has to do with the pendulum swinging back towards heavy personalization, one-to-one outreach.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think it's not just taking over sales development. I think it's also permeating, you know, the closing side of things. And I think if anything, it's been a really strong driving force of pulling marketing and sales a little bit closer together, as opposed to having the sort of brand folks on one side, the demand gen folks on the other side, and the closers on another side.
Yeah, you're spot on. I'm with you.
Cool. So we want to get a little bit tactical today. You're at Sigster, you're selling into marketing teams, which is a really crowded space. Mm-hmm. So talk to me about how you use this balance of creativity, personalization, and scale to make your, to stand out really.
Yeah, sure. So I always joke that there's a list out there called the MarTech 5000, right? And basically what this does is it looks at all of the technologies that marketers are utilizing today. The MarTech 5000 list is now MarTech 7000, yet it's still called the MarTech 5000 list. So, you know, when I have new hires and existing employees ask me, who are your competitors? My answer is all of the other MarTech companies that our customers are looking at on a daily basis. You know, that is who we're competing with, because there are so many options out there today that if you and your application, your solution can't deliver results, you better bet your butt, like they're going to be going to someone else on that MarTech 7000 list. But to answer your question, how do we stand out? We joke that our sales philosophy here is Midwestern nice. So first and foremost, we pride ourselves on being easy to do business with. You have to put the customer and their needs first. You can't put yourself first, but we pride ourselves on making ourselves easy to do business with. But, you know, with outreach, we are starting to go all in with account-based marketing. So we've really honed in on our top 5,000 accounts that we're looking to get into as a team. And we're executing personalized plays around these 5,000 accounts. So, you know, some examples of what we're doing. We're doing the traditional phone and email, but we're doing other things like sending them handwritten notes at the beginning of our outreach, along with personalized stickers that touch on their persona. I actually have an example. So you can see this is the one that we have for event marketers.
All hail event marketers. I like it.
Yeah.
I definitely want to jump into like all the cool things you're doing. Can we just touch a little bit on how you came up with those 5,000?
Yeah. So we have, how we did it is, you know, it starts by looking at your customer base and looking at the attributes that are associated with your customer base, right? So we started there, looking at themes across our customer base. From there, we set up a scoring system for every account within our instance of Salesforce. So essentially, Colin, if you are a new hire or someone on the team, you pull up an account, there's always a number associated with the account that aligns to our ideal customer profile. So for us, we're scoring on, are you B2B? You know, do you have over 250 employees? Are you using a marketing automation platform, right? And then essentially, we're just taking that score and looking at that top tier of 5,000 accounts and deciding, you know, as a sales and marketing leadership team, these accounts feel right. Marketing, this is where you're going to go spend to support the pipeline development.
Gotcha. So it all starts with that list of 5,000. And within your Salesforce, you've got you're basically scoring each account. And then, so it's scoring and segmenting. Or does that number relate to the ideal customer profile?
Yeah, it relates to the ICP. So it's basically a 0 to 1,000 score that we've set up through a company called DataFox.
Okay.
Demand-based does something similar.
Yeah.
But we're working with a third party to score it.
Cool. And so they help you build these criteria. They help you score that. They fill in all the data into your Salesforce.
They do.
Are they appending, or is it just, does it sit there like another layer?
They are, it's both. So they're appending, they're mapping to a field that we can then report on. Mm-hmm. And they also have the traditional like pop out box. But what we do with the fields that we're feeding data to is we build out a dashboard, right? To track all of the top accounts within a territory, traction that's being made, opportunities that are created, and then where these opportunities are going. We call it our territory dashboard.
Cool. I really like that. And so is it just one territory of those 5,000 accounts, or does it split into different segments?
Yeah. So we have, 12 territories today. So those 5,000 accounts were actually what determined how we carved territory at the beginning of the year. So we took the 5,000, we broke it down by US states and started putting together territories with the understanding that our goal was to create equal opportunity within every territory.
Gotcha. Okay. So the territories are broken down geographically, not by market segment or anything like that.
You got it. Yep.
Okay. Yep. And then they're, each account is graded on a scale from 0 to 1,000.
It is. Yep. Cool.
Okay. That's super helpful to have, because then you can kind of add up like what is the total sum of points in each territory. That must have made it a bit easier.
Yeah. And you know, I'll offer this to anybody listening. If you have any questions or need someone to bounce an idea off of, feel free to reach out to me. I'm happy to talk about it. I found that I started with Sixter 2 years ago, the day that we got our Series A funding, and I was tasked with building out and helping to build out kind of our go-to-market. And I think the thing, Colin, that I found the most helpful was honestly just finding other people who had done what I was about to do. And you know, piece together different ideas and then said, okay, realistically, what is going to work here at Sixter? If I can take an aspect of what I learned at Lessonly from my buddies at Demandbase, et cetera, make it Sixter specific, but happy to help anybody.
Cool. You know, I got one person who I'm thinking of specifically that I saw he's a prospect. He's also in the Modern Sales Pros community. And I was searching my email for the email thread and I saw him asking about territories. So if you're listening, Tyler, I'm going to make an intro to Sarah very shortly.
Sounds good.
Cool. So, and thanks for going deep. I know we didn't plan to go that deep on the sort of ICPs. I pick up threads where I'm curious.
Colin, you can put me on the spot.
Cool. Would you sing for me right now?
I don't have a good voice. You don't want that. You don't want that. Yeah.
You said I could put you on the spot. Come on.
Maybe at the end.
We'll do a little karaoke. I'll pull the machine out. We'll do it together. Sound good?
I love it. Yeah.
Cool. All right. So now let's jump into kind of come back to the topic we were supposed to be talking about, which is how do you balance between your core messaging, sort of the stuff that's going to be on brand, and while giving the SDRs or BDRs the flexibility to sort of personalize pieces?
Yeah, good question. So our team, how we go about doing this, well, first and foremost, I believe that we hire sales professionals for a reason, right? And we should expect them to be professionals. You should never expect a sales development person to be a robot and come in and send out automated emails. That's not the role of a sales development rep in my eyes. But how we kind of find that healthy balance is we have our VP of marketing and myself have a running messaging doc where anytime we're playing around with new messaging, this is kind of our Bible, right? I know that this is the document that I need to be aligning outbound messaging to at any given time. So marketing is essentially setting the messaging. And then I and my director of sales development are going into sales loft and entering in this messaging into our outbound cadences, right? As we're entering kind of our core messaging, there are big holes in the messaging for the team to go in and personalize, add additional color. You know, we encourage the team, hey, let's not tweak core messaging too much, but if there's a different way that you want to articulate something, by all means, do it. You're a professional. But to recap, it's kind of marketing is setting that core messaging, then we're putting it into our instance of sales off and allowing our team to go personalize as they see fit.
Gotcha. So it's not like there are specific areas within the message where you're like, personalize this or...
We leave, you know, Colin, we leave... big like blank paragraph spaces to tell them, hey, this might be a good place to go personalize, but you know, if you want to personalize in the paragraph with the core messaging, no big deal. Go do it there, wherever you see fit.
Cool. So it's not super locked down.
No.
When you're personalizing a message for yourself, so put yourself in the SDR role, mm-hmm. See, spot me putting you on it. Where do you typically end up putting your personalization?
We believe in adding the heaviest personalization right in the beginning of a message, because you think about it today, people read, I think it's 80% of messages on their mobile device, right? And when you pull up an email, you can only see so many characters. So you want, you know, them to first and foremost recognize your name. Mm-hmm. You want them to be intrigued by your subject line, and you want them to be interested in whatever the first 50 characters are that show up on the mobile device.
Okay. And so those first 50 characters, some of that's in the signature, or sorry, yeah. In the subject line.
Yep. Yeah.
So is it the personalization live there, or are you?
Personalization does definitely live within that subject line. We all the time are sitting down with our team, looking at the analytics around their outreach, and when we think about what drives an open rate with email, I always say there's three things, right? It's the first one, like I just said, is your name. So, you know, even if you're out there and you're calling people and they're not calling you back, but you're leaving voicemails, I promise you that when you send that email or that LinkedIn request or that direct mail, there's something to be said about name recognition. You recognize that, oh, Sarah Tosh just left me a voicemail. Now she's emailing me. Now she's hitting me on LinkedIn and sending me my favorite bottle of champagne. She's taken time to get to know me, right? Mm-hmm. So first and foremost is the name. The other thing we think about is subject line, hands down, right? You gotta, something that works for us is being fairly ambiguous with subject lines, being personalized, but fairly ambiguous to make someone say, oh, what is this? And then as soon as you're opening that email, like get to the point, similar to a cold call, just, you know, hey, Colin, reason I'm reaching out is I was researching XYZ and I think I can help you. Do you have a few minutes to talk through XYZ? So get to the point.
Cool. Love it. And so along with that awesome messaging and that sort of providing the core messaging, letting the SDRs personalize everything. Actually, before I jump into this next piece, are all of the emails that your SDR is sending personalized?
Yeah. Yep. For the most part, every single one.
Is it just the first touch and or every initial and the follow-ups?
Yeah. So it's mostly like how we think about it is it's varying degrees of personalization. So we typically set up our outreach. It's a 20-day cadence. The first 10 days, there's much heavier personalization than there is in the back half. Mm-hmm. Typically, the last kind of last-ditch effort is heavy personalization too. So think about it. Heavy, then it weans off a little bit in the middle, and then it goes back to heavy before we put them in any sort of
like an inverted bell curve. It's like heavy drops off, heavy again.
Okay. And we're lucky too that we use our technology. So our technology allows folks to run ads through the employee email channels. So what we're doing kind of middle of funnel is we're able to tailor the content that's showing up in that ad to be more personalized based on who we're reaching out to. So it's like less heavier lifting on our reps front, but we're still able to offer more personalization than what most people can do.
Okay, that's fair. That's fair. And so with all of the, you said a 20 days, how many touches within that cadence?
Typically it's a 20, 25 day cadence with, I think it's 10 touch points.
10 touch points, mix of email, phone, social, sort of equally?
Yeah, direct mail is a part of it. What else? Direct mail, and I'm grouping like handwritten notes and then also like physical direct mail in that bucket.
Of the interesting things you said in the pre-interview is you actually had stationery for each individual persona.
We do, yes.
What?
Yes. Here, let me give you an example.
Tell me about that.
Small hail of that marketer. Yeah. So kind of breaking down the channels that our team uses pretty heavily, direct mail. Oh my gosh, does it work? I promise you, if you haven't invested in direct mail, you should. It works so well for our team to generate those yeses, but also to generate no's. Like in the sales development world, when you're driving pipeline, a no is just as valuable as a yes. Mm-hmm. So we use direct mail, I think about it in two ways, right? There's a big thing that we do, and it's so low cost, it doesn't take much time. We'll send handwritten notes to top prospects with custom stationery and then custom stickers for them to rock on their notebook or computer or whatnot. So much of this is showing our prospect that, one, this is a human reaching out to you. I'm not a marketing automation platform. And two, I've taken time to really get to know you and your business and write you a handwritten note. So that's kind of what we're driving. We've found that when we do handwritten notes earlier on in our outreach, it takes much, much less time to get to a yes or no. I think the Bridge Group reported that on average today, it's taking 8 to 12 touch points in order to get someone to respond. Typically with direct mail, we see it almost immediately after that direct mail is received.
And where does that direct mail piece live in your sequence?
Yeah, so like I said, typically on the front end of the sequence, but there's also, we use direct mail as a coaching opportunity too. So my director of sales development, every week, our sales reps are expected to bring one account that they want to send a custom piece of direct mail. So if you remember, I said I think about direct mail in two ways. One is through handwritten notes and persona stickers. The other one is through, we use Sendoso to send custom direct mail pieces. So what I mean by that is, you know, SDR will come to the one-on-one and they'll say, you know what, Sarah, I want to prospect Envision app right now. Then my manager is saying, okay, why? Let's talk about why is this account a top account for you? Who are the contacts that you want to target? Why are these the best contacts? How do you plan to target them from a messaging perspective? And then what are you going to send them? What have you found on social? Mm-hmm. All right, you know, we're going to send them a new Bears hat because I saw that they're a huge Chicago Bears fan and football season is right around the corner, right? So we use direct mail to summarize in two ways, through handwritten notes and then custom direct mail pieces. And we really focus on like a coaching opportunity with this channel.
And so are both of those going through Sendoso, the handwritten notes and everything?
They're not. No, but Sendoso does offer a handwritten notes offering. We don't do that. But we use them purely for the direct mail pieces and it's really sweet. Sendoso has the ability to integrate with Amazon. So you can essentially go into Amazon and order anything that you want. And then it'll be repackaged with all of your Sigster specific or, whatever packaging you want. But yeah, we do the handwritten notes on our own.
Really? So your SDRs are actually writing these notes themselves?
We are. Yep. And I tell them, I'm like, you know, for ABM accounts, top accounts in your territory, yes, spend the time to do that, but use your best judgment. If that score is lower for this account, you've gone after them before and we're not getting anything from them, maybe it doesn't make sense to send direct mail. But that's where kind of that professionalism comes in. Like, you choose what you think is best.
Gotcha. And so your marketing team is collecting all the direct mail pieces and managing all the mail merge and sending stuff out, or do you have a partner locally?
Yep. So we have individual partners that we order swag and direct mail through, and then we essentially send it to a warehouse, a Sendoso warehouse out in Las Vegas to house it all. And then our team can go into the application and handpick what they want to send.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
But the handwritten notes are written by you and then you send them to Sendoso and they match them up, or?
We write them and then we just put them in our mail. Here in the office.
Cool.
Yeah.
And so if an SDR is doing that, how many handwritten notes are they sending out every week?
Typically 15, I think, is the metric that we look at. We measure our team, kind of the daily KPIs are the number of first touches that you're doing. So that's new blood that you're going after, the number of calls, the number of emails that you're sending, and then total connections in a day. And then the overarching KPI is the number of meetings that you're scheduling.
Gotcha. And so is it 15 new touches a week?
It's actually more than that. We right now it's 20 new touches a day, but keep in mind, we have, our strategy is we have ABM accounts. We have about 250 per territory that are top tier accounts, mm-hmm. but then they're also prospecting outside of that. So this strategy with direct mail is definitely one that we use for our ABM accounts.
Gotcha. Okay. So you've got like the top 10% and then you've got the bottom or middle.
Yep.
Whatever. Okay.
You got it. You got it.
Sweet. I was just sitting here picturing your poor SDRs sending out hundreds of these things a week and going, oh man.
Yeah, I got my wrist. My wrist hurts. It's pretty nasty.
I'm a lefty, so I'd have just black ink all over the bottom of my hand.
Poor lefty. And then you're always running into people when you're eating at the dinner table and whatnot. But yep. I'm glad you've made it through.
I survived against much adversity. Yeah. All right. So typically you're leading off direct mail with the first touch. You also mentioned, and I love that you got the persona specific stationery. You got some cool stickers. Did we miss any persona stationery? Or was it the sticker you showed there?
Yeah, it was. So here's the persona stationery, right?
All right. So you got your own card and that's what you're writing on. And so do you have different, like a couple different personas, like event marketers?
So we have five different personas and I was hoping, we just ordered fresh stationery for each of those personas. I was hoping it'd be in before today to show you even more, but we have five personas. So we have the CMO that we're going after. We have the event marketer. We have the content marketer. We have the, marketing ops person, and then also the director of marketing. So all of the stationery and kind of the call to action changes based on who it is that we're targeting. Mm-hmm. And we with our ABM accounts, we, in thinking about the brand, we pull that theme into other channels that we're contacting them on as well. So, the display ads that we're running through Terminus will mirror kind of this design that they're seeing right here in the stationery, the sticker, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And then the advertisement within the email that we're sending through, you know, our own application is also mirroring that design. So when you think about brand consistency, they're saying the same message through the stationery, the sticker, the display ads, the call, the Sigster ad, that we're really trying to surround them from every avenue possible.
That's really cool. And so one thing we didn't touch on in the pre-interview is you're using Terminus as sort of a support mechanism to make sure that you've got good coverage. When does that turn on for you?
Yeah, so we turn it on right away. So right now we have ABM accounts for the first half of the year and the back half of the year. Right now we're in the process of setting our H2 ABM targets up. We're officially rolling them out to the team. I think next Friday, Terminus ads are already on and running. We have played around with turning those display ads on before our sales team started doing their personal outreach. Mm-hmm. And this time around, we're testing doing it simultaneously. So I'll have to follow up with you and let you know which one yielded more results. But time will tell, I suppose.
Cool. Yeah, we've had the Terminus guys on the podcast, and I can't remember the episode number, but all.
Did you have?
Oh man, you're gonna.
Was it Ryan Vitello?
Give me one second.
Okay. Actually, yeah, I'm putting you on the spot now.
You are. We are like, it was Mike Venable.
Okay.
He's their sales manager.
Okay. Awesome.
Yeah, I met Mike at a PE firm. This PE firm had this big sort of growth summit in Vegas a couple of years ago. We met and we started talking about what they were doing there and how they were using ads to support things. And they had this like bananas complicated outreach sequence that was like involving Terminus, and it was like 50 steps, I want to say. If I Google it right now, I think it was episode 48. So if you want to check that out, I think it was a shift in perspective, something, something, something with Mike Terminus.
I will. That sounds great. Episode 48. So when thinking about Terminus and the display ads and how it aligns to brand and the sales team, obviously the brand is following those personas everywhere that they go on the web, which that subliminal messaging helps with getting our foot in the door. But we're also able to feed that engagement data back to our sales team through surging data. So within that territory dashboard that I talked about, at the top of that territory dashboard, our reps are able to see any accounts that are surging or engaging with the ads that we're running.
Okay.
Then they're able to say, okay, you know, Discover Org is engaging. I'm going to call them first thing in the morning, or I'm going to send them direct mail this week or whatnot.
And what are you using to calculate those search scores?
Yeah, it's an algorithm that is proprietary determinist. So it's preset.
Cool. So it's built into their software and it pushes notifications into Salesforce or?
Exactly. So it's an algorithm that once they've seen a level of engagement, then we can push that data to Salesforce so our sales team can go activate on it.
Cool. Okay. I like it. So that was the direct mail. We touched a little bit on ads. We touched a little bit on stationary. I understand you're doing some cool stuff with video.
We are. And it's interesting, Colin. Like, personally, I think I speak for my team when I say this too. We've struggled with video historically.
Here?
Yeah. You know, video, one, you feel awkward when you're doing it. Two, I highly recommend when you record a video, do not go back and watch yourself because you're going to nitpick. And then an hour later, you're going to find that you've re-recorded it 15 times and it's still feels awkward, right? So don't watch it again. But I also struggle just because I feel like as videos gained popularity, like the engagement just isn't quite the same.
Yeah, everybody's got a whiteboard now next to their desk and they're like, hey, Sarah, this is Colin. I'm a real person.
Colin, you're spot on. Yep. But I will say this, our team has seen such amazing results through Drift. Drift is a conversational platform. So if you think about traditional chat, it was always like a customer success thing, right? And Drift has really flipped that on its back and said, why is it just a customer success team? Why can't a sales rep talk to their top prospect if they're on the website? Why can't they? Mm-hmm. So what we're able to do with Drift is we're able to understand anytime someone's on our website and seeking more information and proactively chat with them and introduce ourselves. So our outbound team is constantly looking at our my top accounts there and how can I converse with them. They recently invited us to be a part of their beta program for Drift Video, which I think is officially launched now. But what it does is it takes that conversational bot and combines it with video. So now as my team records videos, they're getting notified through the bot anytime someone's viewing that video. So then they can go chat automatically and say, you know, hey, Colin, gosh, I'm so awkward in video. Please, I hope you got a chuckle out of it. But anywho, really wanted to chat with you about XYZ. Right.
Cool.
So what's kind of changed my mentality is I firmly believe in Drift based on what it's done for my team. And it's made me think about video in a slightly different way.
It's really interesting. I'm a big Drift fan. We've had David Cancel on the show. We haven't had David Gerhart yet, but I think they're trying to line that up, which I've listened to their podcast a ton. So that'd be a really fun one for me, having David Cancel on and saying, you know, no SDRs. And Aaron's just like, eventually you're going to have SDRs. It was a really interesting conversation. Again, I can't remember the episode number. We're over 100. And I think I stopped being able to like count the numbers or somewhere around 30. So it's been a little while.
You got to find that one. I want to take a listen to it.
Cool. But basically it was really interesting. So big shout out to Drift. When we implemented it, we switched off of Intercom just for like the chat on our site. I want to say our leads from Drift, from chat jumped like overall leads jumped 20 to 30%. And then over time. And so maybe we need some help with that from you or from Drift. If you're listening and you're like, hey, I'm really strong at Drift, hit me up. Cause it slowly has declined and declined and declined.
Really?
Hmm. And I've talked to 3 or 4 other people that had almost the exact same thing.
How often are you going in and kind of changing your messaging through the bots?
I believe the team is looking at it monthly.
Monthly. Okay. That's good. And what about, are you looking at that live feed very often?
I'm personally not. I believe our team is, but I'm not sure how much of their day is based off of that.
at first, I was like super skeptical about my team sitting on the live feed. I'm like, this isn't efficient. Like, we need a process around it. I'm not okay with you just sitting here and like drumming your fingers, right? It has been a game changer for us. I mean, yesterday with the live view functionality, you can see anybody that's sitting on your website and proactively chat with them. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to wait for them to go through that bot. You also can look at, the content that they're viewing. And from an outbound perspective, now when I go email them, I'm going to send them similar content to what they were viewing when they were on the site. Mm-hmm. But it's really helped us. I mean, even just yesterday, I had one of my reps who's just fabulous. His name's Tav, come to me and said, "Hey, Sarah, you know, seasonality is hitting us. July's hard in the pipeline world, and I notice website traffic is down a bit. What can I do? Are you cool if I organize a social rally this afternoon where each of us go out on social, we post something, we can use your video for it, we can share a piece of content, tell the why, but to drive traffic back towards the website?" I've never in my 7 years of working in the sales development pipeline world had a sales rep come to me and tell me, "Hey, website traffic is down." Like that just wasn't something that sales reps thought about. But we integrate with Indrift. So we're a lot of our ad campaigns that we're running, we're pushing them towards that Drift bot so they can click on it and then boom, my team's talking to them.
Okay. And that's those are the Terminus ad campaigns pushing to a Drift bot. Then your team is going out.
And the Sigster ad campaigns within the body of any one-to-one email that my team is sending.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Can you turn it on? So any of your customers that are emailing one of your prospects, they're getting like the Sigster ads?
Say that again. Ask that question again.
So say you got one of your customers, and I'm pretty sure the answer is no, but this would be an awesome like sales hack if you could. Yeah. And your customers probably wouldn't like it, but the sales team would love it. Is if your sales team is trying to go after prospect A, and then you have customer B who's emailing prospect A because they have a prior relationship, could you change the, put your ads in your customers?
You're confusing me, Colin. You're putting me on the spot too much. We have you know, an ad running, right? And it's on a one-to-one basis. So that content is dynamically changing based on who's sending and receiving it. So if I email you and I'm tailoring you with a hey, call to action is click here to chat with me, and then you forward that to another buddy, mm-hmm. right? That dynamic campaign will tailor to whoever's receiving that email.
That's really cool.
As long as we have them grouped to, hey, click here, they essentially could click there and interact with our team. We'd be able to tell that it wasn't who I was intending it to be. But yes, that would work depending on like what the default ad campaign is.
That's awesome. And you got it segmented by persona and all that.
We do. Yep. You can segment to that level any way you want. Yep.
Very cool. So let's come back to, I sort of distracted us with Drift. So coming back to Drift and video. So what are you doing in these videos? Because the whole whiteboard thing, everybody's doing that.
Honestly, a way that we've recently been using Drift video that's helped our team is we all have had those cold calls where we call and I'm like, man, I botched it and that was my top account and now I'm never going to be able to get in again. What I tell my team in that instance is it's okay. It's okay, right? You're fine. How do you want to respond to it, right? So a lot of times we've been using video to overcome these harder cold calls where it's like, you know, hey, Colin, I've been thinking about our connection. I know that you shared XYZ with me and I wanted to add a little bit more color, blah, 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 right? So we use it sometimes to overcome a harder cold call. We do it a lot of times as a reminder for a meeting. So, hey, I know our teams are meeting today at 1 p.m. Can't wait to chat with you. Here's the agenda. Let me know if you need anything. We do use it with prospecting. We try to avoid the whiteboard thing and we try to instead pull up our their website. And as our team is saying, hey, Colin, I notice you're promoting this webinar and I really want to know about how you're driving people to sign up for this webinar, mostly because I think we can help having their website up and being able to show the webinar versus just, hey, it's Sarah, here's my whiteboard, nice to meet you. So,
yeah. Hey, I'm a talking head.
Yeah. Yeah. But I also call in like, Video is hard, and I will be the first to admit that I struggle with video sometimes, but don't give up. Give it 100 tries before you decide whether it's working or not.
So I think the key piece here is it's not a video-based first touch. It's sort of in sequence when it makes sense and you found something that's probably like either it's an ABM account and you found something really good on their site, or you've had some engagement and you want to use this to re-engage them.
Exactly. Exactly. Because video takes time, right? Yeah. So don't waste your time on an account that you know they're not going to engage with it.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay, cool. And then that kind of engagement, that's hard to script. So it's not like you're sitting there with like, here's the core messaging, here's your script for a video. It's just, here's this tool, use it authentically.
It is.
How do you teach that?
Yeah, I mean, what we teach is always know your why, right? So anything that you do, you have to be highly intentional. You have to be Midwestern nice about what you're doing. So always know your why. So even with a newer rep, it's asking them that. What is your why behind using this channel to reach out to them? All right, Sarah, my why is I just butchered this cold call and I wish I could have articulated XYZ. All right, there you go. That's what you're going to say. Or, you know, my why is I can't get a hold of them through any other channel and I'm hoping that something different is going to spark their interest. Say that. Be authentic, right? Say, I can't get a hold of you and I'm hoping that by me recording this cheesy video, I'm going to get you to know that I've been really getting to know your account intimately. But I think video, what is amazing about video is it's the most intimate channel out there, right? Mm-hmm. You can see someone's eyes, you can hear their tone, you can read their facial expressions. No other channel can offer that today.
That's fair. We had Scott Barker. He's the...
Yeah, I love Scott. Outreach.
Yeah. So funny enough, Scott lives, so we're in Vancouver. Scott lives 200 feet that way.
Oh my goodness.
So we had Scott on the show and he was talking about one of his favorite email templates, like a follow-up template. Or no, sorry. I think it was a cold email template where he would basically just lay out like, hey, I couldn't reach you. So like, here's the script of our, like of the conversation we would have had. And it's like his cold call script and then his, you know, what he thinks they would reply with. And then he kind of goes through and like a couple objections. And I was like, that's a really great one. I'd love to see you try this with email and just do like the sock puppet version, or sorry, with video, the sock puppet version. Be like, hey, I missed you. So like, here's me, here's you. Let's just role play this out.
Okay. Okay.
Cool. If you do that, we'll throw it in the show notes as a nice little bonus content.
Okay. Okay. Sounds great. What was it like interviewing Scott, given that he a lot of times is the one interviewing? Was he a hard one?
Yeah. I asked him one question. I went out, had a beer, sat in a hammock for a while, came back an hour later, and he was still going with great content. It was probably the best episode we've done.
He is such a good guy. We actually met my first week on the job here at Sigster. We were at a conference and just connected. And it's funny how small the tech world can be. That's for sure. It was when he was still with his previous company. I can't remember what it was.
Sales Hacker.
No, before Sales Hacker.
Pre-Sales Hacker.
Yeah.
Oh, I know the name of the company too. I feel bad. I'll remember it as soon as we get off the podcast.
Yeah.
All right. Filled with distractions today. We've talked about video. I understand you also do quite a bit with events. So talk to me about what does the event plan look like and how does that fit into your SDR's world?
Oh man. I mean, like most teams, the biggest chunk of our marketing budget goes towards events. And you know, our sales team, sales development in particular, they're the activators for the event. Right. So they're the one letting folks know, hey, we're going to be at this event. We'd love for you to stop by our booth and talk about XYZ, but we want to meet you. So our playbook is ideally, and I'm getting more involved with events, but ideally I don't want to sign up for an event unless I can get a feel for who contact wise is going to be at the event. If we can get our hands on any sort of pre-reg list, then we're going through the accounts and reaching out and saying, hey, we're gonna be at Serious Decisions this year. We really want to talk to you about XYZ. I think we can help. By the way, we're also giving away a free Stan Smith Adidas tennis shoes for anyone that takes a meeting with our team. So we typically, given that Sigster, I mean, we have 70 employees today. We don't have the brand recognition that a Salesforce, a demand base, a you know, whoever it might be has with their name, that we do try to add value and then also incentivize at events to make sure that they show up. We also do little like small silly things, but it's things that people remember, right? Here's a little sleeve color that it says grounds for a new friendship. And a lot of times we'll give these to folks going. We put a local coffee gift card in there along with a business card and say, hey, thanks for chatting with me. Nice meeting you. Here you go. Right. It's the little things that matter. And who doesn't love caffeine at an event when you're on your feet all day? But post-event, we're quickly loading any of those leads along with any notes that we took on our conversations into our CRM. And then our sales team is rocking and rolling on them. We do try to have sometimes that like handoff from event to sales team taking over can be really wonky. Mm-hmm. So what we try to do is we ask the folks who were working the booth to, for some of their more memorable conversations, help facilitate that handoff. So, hey, Colin, you know, here are notes from our conversation. Thoroughly enjoyed our conversation at Serious Decisions. I want to introduce you to my buddy Holden, who's going to be running point from here, but just helping with that the handoff process, right? Mm-hmm. And then on the back end, it's about asking yourself all the time, how much pipeline did this event generate? If it didn't generate above a certain threshold, we're not going to do it next year. We're going to try something new. And then how much closed won business came from this? And remembering too, Colin, like with events, it's a longer, you have to be a little bit more patient with pipeline developing from events. A lot of times it's not going to happen. It'll happen right away, but you will see over time people coming back maybe from an event that you talked to 3 quarters ago that now are remembering you and ready to chat. So be patient as you are looking at pipeline and close one business from events.
That's awesome. So two questions. Yeah. One, how much pipeline closed business do you want to see from each event? Like, are you looking for money back, 2x, 3x, 10x? And second question is how long do you give that event to get pipeline and close one credit? Is it until the next event, you know?
Or? Yeah. So to answer your first question, it has to be at least 2x in order for us to consider doing it again next year. It's really fun. Sixshare, we're basically 3 years old. So we're playing around all the time with our event strategy. So for this year, we're trying more of the roadshows to see how that compares to a traditional corporate event. Mm-hmm. But 2x minimum. We've had some events that were 10x, obviously the more the better, but has to be 2x. And then typically, I mean, for your second question, how long are you giving the event to pay off? I think a lot of that depends on what your sales cycle looks like. We have a 45-day average sales cycle. So we typically give it 3 quarters before we report on if it was effective or not. But the most important thing is just like annually, as you're planning out your event strategy, making sure you have enough data to know it worked or it didn't.
Cool.
And I actually would be curious, like for anyone listening, I'm thinking a lot about our event strategy next year. And a hole I've found is like, how do you find more of these events, right? How do I, is there a forum I can go to for top marketing events? How do I find them, right? Because I feel like every year there's new events popping up with new audiences. So if anyone has recommendations, please let me know.
Cool. And I find sometimes, and I don't know too much about the marketing events, but I find sometimes it's the smaller, more niche ones where you've got a few thousand people that are way more effective because it's a lot more intimate, a lot better conversations, as opposed to, you know, inbound where there's 20,000 people.
Yeah.
30,000. Yeah. Like,
I'm with you. Colin, we're going back and forth right now on, do we sponsor Dreamforce? We've done it the past 2 years and it just didn't pay off for us. But we're saying to ourselves though, we're like, well, crap, you know, working in the SaaS space, if you're not at Dreamforce, you should be. So
why should you be, right? Like you take the sort of Warren Buffett mindset of like anything that everybody is doing is bad. If all of your competitors are there, it's a bad idea because it's going to be the least efficient use of your cash.
Yeah.
We haven't gone to Dreamforce in 3 or 4 years and like Aaron's ex Salesforce. And so it seemed like sacrilege for us not to be there. But it came down to, are we getting an ROI on it? And we just weren't.
That's what it's about. That's purely what it's about. It's like, whatever's going to drive pipeline, do it. If it's not driving pipeline, don't be afraid to walk away. Try something new. You can always go back, but try something new.
Cool.
But overall, I feel really, we've spent a lot of time over the past few quarters honing in on our event playbook. I guess the last thing that I would note there is it's so important with events for every role within your organization to know if they're a stakeholder and what their job is for the event. So we activate events typically a month in advance, where we lay out, you know, sales development, this is your role, sales, this is your role, customer success, this is your role. Now let's go.
Cool. I like it. We, for anybody who's listening that hasn't heard me talk about it, I've written a couple of posts about our SASTR event strategy. And basically we do some things a little bit differently. And similar to what you're doing with, you know, getting stuff into the CRM right away. Mm-hmm. We took it a step further and sometimes and a little bit further away, but we actually created like postcard sized graphics that just have like an infographic with our qualification criteria on them. And then like a box for their email address and a box for next steps. And then anytime somebody comes by the booth and they're having an engaged conversation, that's when we coach our team to pull up this card and just start ticking the boxes. And that I found was a really great framework for having consistently good conversations.
That's good. I like that idea. I may steal that for Impact Live.
For sure. I shared the AI files in the blog post, and the guy that did all the design for me, he's on Elance or Upwork. And basically we went from like our metrics were terrible. The first 2 years we went to SASTR. I think we got a couple of closed deals, but you know, if we were ROI positive, it was only because, you know, we got in early and we had a good deal for the sponsorship. Mm-hmm. And so it was like 3 years ago, we weren't, or maybe 4 years ago, we weren't going to go back. And I said, okay, we'll give it one more year, but I want to see a 3x ROI at least. And in doing this, we went from, the transition was 300 and some odd badge scans in the sort of couple of days and one or two closed deals from the previous year to like five or six closed deals and like 60 new contacts that we added to our CRM. Is like such a huge difference in quality.
Yeah. It, you know, that's the name of the game right now with everyone moving towards ABM. It's flipping that traditional funnel on its back and saying, it's not a lead game. It's a closed one game. It's a customer game, right?
100%.
Something you said that was interesting, Colin, that it made me think about it, was it a deal that you were getting, right? And yeah, you can be ROI positive, but what happens the following year if you go back to that event and they're going to charge you what they would charge any other sponsor? Are you going to be able to be as impactful? Mm-hmm. That it has me thinking about, you know, are there any events where we have been cut a deal? And as I think about it for next year, are we confident that we can drive the full price ROI that we need?
Yeah, because it's so easy to just say, oh, well, we're getting a deal here, so we should go back. We've gone every year. And like, that's the excuse that I was using myself to go back to SASTR. Oh, we like going to SASTR. It's fun getting out of, you know, the rain in Vancouver in February and going down to where it's going to be sunny and hot. And then being surrounded by, you know, other SaaS companies, it felt like the right thing to do. But when you looked at the metrics, it's sort of like that feeling distracts you from actually going back and diving into the metrics and realizing like, oh, we're not actually making money on this, even though we're generating like good brand awareness. But as a bootstrap company, we can't pay the bills with good brand awareness. So we need that sort of immediate revenue to come in and help us out.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think the point you make, Colin, is like, brand is really hard to measure, right? And the whole purpose of today is like, how are brand and sales development related? And brand is really, really hard to measure. And, you know, I think about my VP of marketing, he's constantly pushed by our CEO of brand. We spend so much on brand, but how do you measure brand? And a big thing, like sales development can help you measure brand, right? We can measure this brand play of handing out these gift cards. We can tag each contact that I gave one to with this brand play. And now all of a sudden I know, right? Or the brand play that sending a gift to them, like it, we use sales development to help measure some of these brand plays that we know in our gut is so, so impactful to our customer base, but oftentimes it feels fluffy and something that we shouldn't do. So think about that as how can you use your sales development team to really drive home that brand like is something you have to be thinking about?
It's sort of, to me, the way in like framing it up in this way, it almost makes it feel like sales development is that execution arm of, that marketing's always felt like they're missing.
Yes. You're the middle of the teeter-totter is how I explain it, right? You're taking everything that marketing is doing and you're executing on that and driving pipeline and then getting it to sales. You're spot on.
Because otherwise without sales development, it's just two idiots sitting on the log on the ground.
I didn't say it. You said it.
As somebody that sat on all three camps, I think I'm fair to say. So last thing I wanted to ask you about was G2 reviews. So we talked about G2 crowd.
Yep.
How does this relate to sales development? How does this relate to the brand?
Yeah. No one can tell a story like your customers can tell the story, right? You think about how we work as social human beings. Think about like how a story makes you feel versus me getting in front of you and saying, hey, Colin, you know, we have 500 customers and we influence $1 billion of their pipeline and they got this many downloads. It's different. So in the sales development world, we're blessed that we have a lot of reviews on G2 and Capterra that we can use to our advantage. We're constantly sending those to prospects kind of saying, hey, you know, I'm not going to do the talking. I'm going to let my customers do the talking. But also G2, they're great partners of ours. We leverage their intent data on the sales front. So we're able to see on a daily basis what accounts are viewing the categories that we set in and also competitors. Mm-hmm. And we can activate on that. And then we most recently found out that we also have the ability to build out these custom landing pages, highlighting customer success stories that are relevant to whoever we're going after. So, you know, let's say we have 100 customer reviews in G2 crowd, but I'm contacting you, you're a manufacturing firm who's a director of internal comm. I can narrow that 100 down to maybe the 3 and send that to my prospect very quickly through G2. But we use G2 not only to inform, but also for intent data to activate our team.
That's awesome. And so it's one of those other things that sort of sits in your CRM and says, hey, you know, this target account is surging or scoring highly or whatever it is. And then you have your SDRs. It's just another one of those triggers for them to go out and activate one of their ABM accounts.
And then think about it from a customer perspective too. Like if we have a top customer that is viewing a competitor's page, that's not good. Mm-hmm. So we need to get our CS team on that. Right. And reacting to that. And we need our marketing team to turn on Terminus ads, talking through the ROI that our application can drive, not our competitors. That it's really solid data that we've been very happy with.
Cool. I love it. I feel like I've tapped you for a ton of information. I want to get sort of 3 specific things that I ask every guest that comes on the show. So quickly, how do you get people to respond to your emails?
Treat them like a human and be authentic.
Cool. How do you handle the brush off on a cold call?
Similar to dating, remember that there are other fish in the sea. So much of selling is about your mentality, move on. But also if you're thinking about that cold call still, don't be afraid to very genuinely follow up and through video, like I talked about, and say, hey, Colin, I've really been thinking about our conversation and I wanted to reiterate XYZ. Like worst thing that can happen is they give you a snarky no.
Gotcha. I saw your prompt for similar to dating and I thought you were going to go this whole stalker route.
Just like,
never let them go.
Yeah, stalker, or just like give it a little bit of time. It's amazing what time can do for situations.
I'm going to find all their numbers. I'm going to call them daily. I'm going to text them. I'm going to email them.
Yeah, don't be the stalker. Don't be the stalker, but give them a little bit of room to breathe and then maybe revisit.
Cool. And, you know, ideally we don't need to push, but what happens when you do need to push at the end of the quarter?
Do more. You are the only person that controls your work ethic. Go the extra mile with personalization. Utilize channels that maybe you wouldn't normally, but also like work smarter. So we're constantly asking ourselves, like, what are campaigns we can have our team run where there's not a ton of thinking, they can just go. Mm-hmm. So right now, for example, we're going back to all old opportunities over the last year that never hit pipeline. They basically came, they had a quick demo, and then it didn't go anywhere. So work smarter.
And how long do you wait on one of those demos? Or like, is it 3 months, 6 months? Doesn't matter.
Typically, I mean, it's interesting. We're actually like debating this internally, but if it's just sitting, if they come to a meeting, we do a little bit of discovery, they want to see the application, then they just sit in that stage before they hit pipeline. We give it 2 weeks and then we have our rep, market is lost.
Okay. So if they're cold calling, trying to get the next step and they've got nothing, then, and they sit there for 2 weeks, it's close lost.
Lost. They're not giving you a next step for a reason.
Cool. I like it. So I want to, I'd like to give every guest an opportunity to promote themselves, the company, whatever it is, in the most sales podcast way possible. So welcome to our segment called Cold Call Me.
Yay.
So who am I today? What's my persona?
Why don't you can be Colin. I'll give you your same name. I want you to be a director of marketing. So I think it's fair to assume you oversee a few different functions.
Okay.
And I'm not trying to qualify you. I'm essentially trying to get you to either give me a little bit of time right now or agree to schedule a 5-minute call with me at a better time.
Okay, cool.
I'm good.
All right, you ready?
All right. Ring, ring, ring.
Hey, this is Colin.
Hey, Colin, it's Sarah giving you a call from Sixter. How's it going?
Good. Who's Sixter?
Good question. I'll definitely keep this brief. Sixter, we turn every email that your employees send into your best ad channel. But anywho, you're probably like, why is Sarah reaching out to me? I couldn't help but notice that on your website, you have tons of great customer reviews. And I was really curious to talk to you about how you're driving eyes and engagement towards those reviews. Do you have a minute to chat?
No, I'm just heading into a meeting.
Okay. Well, why don't we do this? Could you spare maybe 5 minutes tomorrow to chat with each other?
What do you want to talk about?
That is a good question. I want to talk about how I can help you. Like I said, I want to help. I want to talk through your strategy for your customer reviews and share some ideas around how I think we can help you drive more engagement. Does tomorrow at 2 p.m. work?
Going for the kill. I like it. That was awesome.
Cool. Cool. It's always funny looking at the person as I'm calling them, but you did a good job, Colin. Thanks for taking it easy.
It's always a weird one because I want to throw some objections so I'm not like letting you off easy, but I also don't want to just to default to like, no, not interested, because yep. There's no fun. There's no sport in that. It's like, it's, you know, you can try and fight to overcome, but yeah, it's like, it's a balance of like trying to give you a tough time versus letting you get your message out.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
Sarah, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing all your swag, sharing all the cool things that your sales development team, that you're doing for your sales development team to really help them hit their numbers, to make sure that you're staying on brand for Sixter and driving a whole ton of value for the company. So thank you.
Thank you, Colin. It was so much fun. Thanks for having me.
I had a great time. We talked about a lot. If anybody wants to get in touch with you, whether it's talking territories, talking drift video, or recommendations on what marketing conferences you should go to, what's the best way for them to get in touch?
It's easy. Sarah@sixter.com. And that's SIGSTR.com.
And Sarah with an H. But obviously, if they're listening, you can see how it's spelled because it's in the description of the video.
Yeah. Sarah with an H.
Right on. Thanks so much for coming on the show. See you next week, everybody.